And now it's time for On Our Minds. This week, poetry. April is National Poetry Month, and we're celebrating with some of our favorite interviews. Today we're going to hear from Nikki Giovanni. She's one of the most widely read American poets. She's published more than 30 books and helped carry the legacy of the civil rights and Black Power movements into the present. She's been called both a national treasure and a living legend. When Nikki Giovanni sat down to talk with Steve Paulson, she started with a poem called For Sandra.
I wanted to write a poem that rhymes, but revolution doesn't lend itself to bebopping. Then my neighbor who thinks I hate asked, "Do you ever write tree poems? I like trees." So I thought, I'll write a beautiful green tree poem. Peek from my window to check the image, notice the schoolyard was covered with asphalt, no green. No trees grow in Manhattan. Then, well, I thought, the sky. I'll do a big blue sky poem. But all the clouds have winged low since No Dick was elected. So I thought again, and it occurred to me, maybe I shouldn't write at all, but clean my gun and check my kerosene supply. Maybe these are not poetic times at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1967.
I was going to say, it has a very 60s sensibility to it. When you look back on a poem like that from a different part of your life, does that seem like a different you, or do you share those sentiments?
Oh, I love the 60s. I think we were a great generation. And actually, my next-door neighbor, Sandra, was dating Clifton Davis, the actor, and she lived with, shared an apartment next door with Morgan and Jeannie Freeman. Hmm. Actually, that was a great neighborhood because directly across the street was Milford Graves and Don Pullum, musicians. Gregory Hines lived around the corner. George Faison lived around the corner. Sidney Poitier was a good friend of a guy named McHale's, and he would come over to McHale's, who ran a bar at 96 and Columbus. But it was quite a fun neighborhood, you know, and there's a lot of people around. But Sandra was her name, but we called her Cookie. And she was one of those people that was always curious, like, why are you people always being so mean? And, you know, and it's like, well, let me write this poem for her.
Well, it's interesting to hear you talk about all these artists from very different fields, but this is such a political poem too. And I'm wondering if were all those people in the neighborhood that you used to hang out with, did you kind of share a political vision with them?
I don't recall having that much discussion. I would never think of Morgan Freeman as political, but at that particular time, Morgan was doing Demilitarized Zone, and he was working in the Village. He would, you know, take the train down with Novella Nelson, the actress, and they were all doing poetry, anti-war poetry in the DMZ. I think artists do what they think they need to do. The poets are probably always going to be the people in front because all we have is the words. You're going to do what your art let you do, and you're going to do it in the way that you still have a lot of respect for yourself.
Well, throughout your career, it seems that you have really examined the role of poetry in politics, and I'm wondering how that's changed for you over time. What do you see as poetry's role in American politics?
Well, I think that I quit thinking about America so long ago that that's not a question I could really respond to like that because we have a global situation. There's just nothing that's happening now that's not global. All around the world, you know, the poets who are speaking up are being arrested. But I think that our job is to be as honest as we can about what we understand.
So if the job of the poet is to tell the truth, can the poet change people's minds?
I mean,
change people's political view?
Oh, I doubt that. I don't think anybody, no. I think any poet that thinks that, and we've had a few that do, you know, they're crazy. I mean, that's not going to happen. But what you are doing is you're preaching to the choir. And so you're reminding people that the job that we're all doing is an honorable job, that the people have a right to be heard. But I think that what we do is we keep putting it out. And about 10 years later, somebody quotes us.
So I'm just to pursue that then. So I'm just trying to figure out, so what you see as the role of the poet in society as, is it helping to shape a sensibility? Is it helping people to reflect on what the times are all about?
I think of my job as my job, and that is I write. And I write as truthfully and as honestly. You know, so you asked my poem for Sandra. I enjoyed poem for Sandra. Would I write it today? I'm 68 years old. It'd be stupid.
Yeah.
You know, say, well, whoa,
sure.
What has she been smoking?
But, well, can I take you back back into your own literary history a bit and ask you to read another poem from your 1970 collection, No Reservations.
Oh, that.
Page 68.
Thank you. There are no reservations for the revolution. No polite little clerk to send notice to your room saying you are wanted on the battlefield. There are no banners to wave you forward, no blaring trumpets, not even a blues note, moaning, wailing, lone blue note, to the Yoruba drum saying, strike now, shoot, strike now, fire, strike now, run. There will be no grand parade and a lot thrown round your neck. People won't look up and say, why, he used to live next to me. Isn't that nice? It's his turn now. There will be no recruitment station where you can give the most convenient hours. Monday, Wednesday, I play ball. Friday night, I play cards. Any other time, I'm free. There will be no reserve of energy, no slacking off till the next time. Let's see. I can come back next week. Better not wear myself out this time. There will be reservations only if we fail.
You know, I have to say, it's wonderful to hear you read your poems. And I'm wondering if, I mean, have you always thought of your poems as something to be read out loud?
No, I'm a book person, and it's why I'm not a rapper. I'm always saying to my students, and we read aloud, and I'm always saying to them, you know, you have to read them aloud. If you can't read them aloud, they're not working, because the eye can't do what the mouth can't do. You have to breathe. You know, so if you're doing Finnegan's Wake, you know exactly what Joyce was doing because he had to breathe, as do you. Hmm. I think that my poetry is very readable, and I would encourage anybody that was reading poetry to read aloud.
Well, I want to ask you to read another poem in there, and I think it's for Lena Horne, Poem for a Lady Whose Voice I Like.
Oh, yeah, it was for Lena, and she's my friend. People used to be on her because she's one drop-dead gorgeous. Lena is just a beautiful woman, and they told her she wasn't a good singer because she wasn't Ethel Waters and she wasn't even Josephine Baker. You know, she was a pop singer, really. And Lenny Hayden took over her musical career, as well as, of course, they ultimately married at a time when black and white people were not allowed to be married. But people are cruel, and you have to kind of protect yourself. Hmm. And you do that just by deflecting it. So he said, you ain't got no talent. If you didn't have a face, you wouldn't be nobody. And she said, God created heaven and earth and all that's black within them. So he said, you ain't really no hot stuff. They tell me plenty, sister, take care of better business than you. And she said, on the third day, he made chitterlings and all good things to eat and said, that's good. So he said, if the white folks hadn't been under your skirt and been giving you the big play, you'd have had to come on uptown like everybody else. And she replied, then he took a big, black, greasy rib from Adam and said, we will call this woman, and her name will be Sapphire, and she will divide into four parts that Simone may sing a song. And he said, you're pretty full of yourself, ain't you? So she replied, show me someone not full of herself, and I'll show you an empty person.
Oh, that is such a wonderful poem.
I love it. You know, cause she's just like, I'm having none of it. Don't hand me this.
I have a question about how you write your poems, because I've heard that you don't really like to rework lines.
You can't really tweak it. And there's something in critics that make them think, oh, if you just change that word, you would have a better poem. Well, actually, no, baby, you wouldn't. You would have a poem that would be just a little bit lopsided. And I was laughing. I said, it's kind of like, you know, you're making, say, for example, a stew, and you know something's missing, so you put a little salt in. And then you put the little salt in, something's missing. Oh, maybe I should do a little garlic, and you put a little garlic. And pretty soon, you've ruined it. Because what you should have done was to sit down
just throwing the whole thing out.
Well, just think about it. I mean, what I like to do, and I say that to my students at Virginia Tech too, just put it away. Relax. Go walk your dog. Go have a beer. Go have a glass of wine. Sleep on it. Try to think of what it is you're trying to do. Because you're not trying to write a poem. You're trying to tell a story. So you can't correct the poem. You have to make sure that the flow of the story is what you want it to be. And most writers really do. It's a weakness of the genre, I suppose. We all think our words are sacred. Langston Hughes said every writer needs a built-in, he said, SH detector. But I won't say that. It's probably a family show. But I think that Langston was right. Sometimes you've done the best that you can do. And sometimes that's good enough. Just give yourself a chance to be satisfied with your work. That's all you can ask of yourself.
Nikki Giovanni is the author of more than 30 books, and she is one of the most widely read and admired American poets. Steve Paulson talked with her.